So we're going to start with the next presentation. My name is Andreas Färber. And following up to Andrew's talk about the software user space side of 64-bit ARM, I'm going to talk a bit about the hardware side of ARM boards, in particular focusing on the kernel for both 32-bit and 64-bit. I'm speaking a bit slowly so that those that are interested in attending the talk can still come in. Hello, we're starting with a talk. Okay. So, OpenSUSE Factory is being built in a sub-project, OpenSUSE Factory ARM. We have three architectures available for this, ARMv6L, ARMv7L, and ARCH64. We have OpenQA running for ARCH64, unfortunately not for the other ones at this point in time. And we have that working for KVM only, so that means that any bits that are specific to a particular board as far as booting goes might occasionally work or not work. In particular, the Raspberry Pi users have experienced that in the last year, unfortunately. There has been a lot of progress on various fronts for enabling ARM hardware for OpenSUSE. There is a lot more boards that we can squeeze into this half hour, so for one, if I don't mention a board here, it probably means that it was working before and there is not much change to report on. Or if you think that I missed something that's new or worth mentioning, then please raise it at the end of the talk. I'm also going to mention some new ones, even if Andrew has already mentioned some for 64-bit before. So let's start with ARMv6, that's the ARM11 processor in this case, with a Broadcom BCM2835 SoC. I'm not going to read all the details, so the main changes here are that we have managed to get the Raspberry Pi-dash firmware package accepted, cleaned up into... I'm seeing different slides here, so let me check. Okay. So that's what I was talking about for you to read. Sorry about that. We have the Raspberry Pi firmware package accepted into Tumbleweed. We also have slightly just rearranged the configs into a new subproject just this week. There is a UEFI enablement for the Hubert-ARPi package. The kernel default is booting very well with whatever is available driver-wise in the mainline kernel. And there is a Juice Raspberry Pi since this last year building in factory and no longer as a contra project. There should also be MESA acceleration, 3D acceleration for the VC4 available. I haven't been able to personally test it for this talk, so if anyone has played with that, please speak up later on. Let's see. Okay, so this is working now. There's not much to say about the BeagleBone except that there has been a change in the mainline Linux kernel, switching it from TTYO for the serial console to TTYS. If you're downloading a new image, then you should notice about that. If you've been updating the kernel on your new image or planning to, then this is a change that you may need to make in the boot script. Moving on to the Raspberry Pi 2. So it is possible to use the kernel default 4.6 from Tumbleweed to boot into the device, unfortunately not kernel LPIE, but there are some drivers still missing or not working there, so for now you still need to use the contrib. For the Jetson TK1 board, we also have a UEFI enablement available. In the U-boot package, which needs to be flashed separately on the board. The Tumbleweed kernel finally is working also with networking now. But what we're still lacking is a 32-bit juice image with the LPAE kernel that also includes the DTP when we have it right now. So currently that is only available for a 64-bit. The Firefly RK3288 board is running the OpenSUSE Tumbleweed kernel by now. There are still some issues with the Hubert bootloader. So since we did the UEFI enablement, it was not working. So I've needed to manually disable that. But apart from that, things are working quite fine there. The Odroid C1 has been making some progress on getting mainline as far as the kernel goes. So the MMC drivers should have gone into the Linux Next kernel like a couple of weeks ago, but we don't have a juice image that includes those yet. Then there's been a new guitar board or module with a board. Unfortunately, nothing is mainline from that, so I've not managed to get that running OpenSUSE easily yet. In particular, no ready-made juice image. Again, if anyone else has been able to get something working on there, please bring it up later. Then Marvell has publicly announced that it will be working with SUSE and OpenSUSE and enabling its board. And the first board that we've been working on has been the ClearFog from SolidRun. We have a Hubert package for that available. Unfortunately, Hubert is still lacking the particular boot scripts to allow our kernel to boot immediately. So there's some configuration variables that one needs to set manually. It is possible to boot into the grub2 bootloader, and unfortunately, since we're unable to have a GPT partition table for this particular chipset, our grub package currently does not have the modules available for actually accessing the FAT partition, sorry, the MBR partitions. But the kernel is fully mainline, including the DTS. We've also had the chance to play with an early version of the Turris Omnia, which you can see on your right-hand side over there. It is running a very similar SOC. The U-boot is not yet in mainline. The kernel similarly should work, except that the DTS file is not yet there. Then there's a new board that we've just received with a MediaTek chipset. It appears that the kernel support for that is there, but the DTS file is still missing, and it looked as if the U-boot was not mainline, but I couldn't fully test that out yet. Moving on to the 64-bit ARMv8 boards. There's the Raspberry Pi 3, which was already shown earlier on. Since this week, 2 days ago, we have a Raspberry Pi firmware package, also with a prepared config.txt file that has the enablement for 64-bit kernels. There is a 64-bit U-boot RP3 package available. I tried testing one of the Linux Next kernels. That was not yet booting, but we do have a Juice Raspberry Pi 3 AR64 image available as a contrib, and that one is using a 42.2 kernel and was working very well. There's the high keyboard. Personally, I can't say too much about that. So ARM trusted firmware should be available in mainline. U-boot is available in mainline. There's also, it is shipping with a Tiana core on there, so UEFI. The kernel is mainline. We do have a juice image available, but I didn't manage to test that in time for this talk. So if anyone can give us a status update after the talk, that would be appreciated. Then there's the Dragon board, also shown by Andrew. There is an issue with building an SD card because they are still using the they're using a couple of Qualcomm specific bootloaders as well as the Android LK bootloader, and it is necessary to actually patch the bootloader to make it boot from SD card via instead of the internal eMMC. And there is. If we take the existing one on the eMMC, then we can take a chain-loaded U-boot, and with that, not get into UEFI yet, but it's possible to build, to use at least mainline kernels. Unfortunately, the kernel LPIE was not yet booting when I last tested it. There's also a new 96 board that Andrew did not show in his talk, I believe. That's with an Actions S90 SoC. We did not yet get access to that. Again, if anyone knows anything more about that, apart from that, quite obviously the kernel is not yet mainline, then please let us know after the talk. There are both the LeMaker Cello 96 board and the announced today SoftIron Overdrive 1000 board, which are based on an AMD processor. The kernel should be all mainline, and the existing EFI juice image should just work. And as we heard today, the Overdrive 1000 even ships with Leap pre-installed, which is a pretty cool thing. Thank you very much. Then there's also in the 96 board's form factor, the Andromeda Box Edge from Marvell. It appeared as if there were no U-boot sources available, which I found quite disturbing since that is a GPL project. The kernel for that did not seem to be mainline yet, and unfortunately the one board that we had available, actually we managed to brick apparently while soldering on JTAG connector. So if anyone has had more success than we do, then please let us know. We've played a little with the Jetson TX1 board with a 64-bit NVIDIA SoC. We have a U-boot package available. It's got some weird P and a four-letter name code, the only one of that. The kernel was still in the process of being mainlined, and Linux Next was not fully working the last time we tested it, but that's already a couple of weeks back. Similarly, there's the Odroid C2 board that has come out with a 64-bit M-Logic processor. There has been, since the last U-boot release, a mainlining of U-boot bootloader, but the mainlining of the kernel is still in quite early stages. At FOSDEM, I showed the Geekbox board with a Rockchip 64-bit SoC. By now, the ARM trusted firmware for that one is mainline. U-boot, unfortunately, is not yet mainline, which makes it a little hard to boot OpenSUSE kernels, but it is possible to boot at least the mainline Linux Next kernel, and it should probably be possible to build the kernel head to make the kernel head work on that one. For the Pine 64, mainlining is still in progress. There is a juice image available as a contrib, but unfortunately at this time it got stuck during boot. It supposedly worked at one point, and there is one with a downstream kernel that should work a little better, but not yet with the mainline kernel. And then one board that we just received with a Samsung 64-bit processor. It appears that the software for that one is not yet mainline either. And we've not been really able to prepare anything for that yet since it's just out. And just announced is a new board from Marvell. It appears that the kernel definitely was already in progress for mainlining. U-boot not yet, to my knowledge, and obviously the board is not yet physically available. So, for for you guys as Tumbleweed users, whenever I was mentioning on my slide that something is not mainline, that means that you will not find support for that board in the official Tumbleweed distribution and images. In particular, I always remind people that Tumbleweed is not just a set of user space packages. It also includes the kernel. And one difficulty that arises in particular when using some old Android kernels by vendors on certain boards, then packages like Tumbleweed, that packages like systemd might actually run into trouble with ioctls or syscalls not implemented in the particular kernel. If you have such a case, then you can use the juice rootfs, which is just the user space parts. In some cases, people have created sub-projects under devel arm factory contrib, where a separate kernel-source package with a particular kernel flavor is packaged that can be combined with the regular Tumbleweed user space or possibly with additional firmware or other versions of user space packages to make something boot at all. Obviously, that means that any kernels in those contrib sub-packages don't get a terrible lot of love, and so you will not get security updates there. Maybe from time to time they might get updated, but only as far as the contributors take care of that. SUSE and OpenSUSE kernel team does not maintain those. In theory, depending on which kernel it is, so if it's like a Linux Next kernel that we've packaged there with additional patches, then that would be a system that you can easily just update to the latest kernel, whereas if it's, say, a 3.0 kernel, 3.4, 3.8, 3.10, whatever comes with certain Android flavors, then chances are that there will be disruptive changes if at some point mainline support gets added for a particular board. So yeah, some packages simply there get contributed and start to bit rot. Some help with that would be appreciated. And in some cases, like the Raspberry Pi, I've taken pity and seen to getting them into the hardware repository or whatever other repositories those packages might live as a devel project. If something is not quite working in the Tumbleweed kernel and the official one, then there's always the kernel head to check, at least once we've updated the kernel config so that it builds again. Should be for 64-bit, not yet for 32-bit. And in theory, there would also be a kernel Linux Next available for builds. Unfortunately, what we do not have for the Linux Next kernel at this point in time is DTP packages. So here's a quick graphic about how all those kernel repositories relate. So let's see. Do we have a mouse pointer over there? Here it is. OK. So this is the kernel.org linux.git repository. Any new mainline development goes into there through pull requests, obviously into Linux Next first as a staging or some particular maintainers, a repository first. And at some point, once a kernel is released, then maintenance releases will end up in the Linux stable Git repository. At some point, together with the configs that sit in the OpenSUSE-specific kernel source .git repository. We will end up with a Git tree combined, also with some patches of ours. And that then ends up in the kernel head repository. It gets at some point submitted to kernel stable, and then to OpenSUSE factory. And from there on, we inherit it into OpenSUSE factory ARM. Now, what does this mean for the vendors? It means that if you are manufacturing an ARM chip or an ARM board based on such a chip, then please don't just put your sources somewhere on GitHub or elsewhere in the internet. And that's not the way how we will get them into Tumbleweed. Patches need to be submitted to the mainline Linux kernel, kernel.org, the particular mailing lists. And also please understand that we do not use the def config, so it's not sufficient just to enable things in the mainline kernel's configs, but we are maintaining our own kernel configs and need to have not just the particular SOC, but also all the peripheral drivers enabled in our own repository. And depending on whether you have your bootloader in flash storage or on a medium such as an SD card, then we also need to deliver that particular bootloader to our users. So that means that we need to have that bootloader sources available in Tumbleweed as well. And the only way to get that done is to submit the enablement patches for your particular hardware into the respective upstream projects, such as the mainline U-boot. And from there on, we can then inherit it with the next release version. I did mention UEFI a couple of times. There is a talk in 7 minutes about that particular topic that I'm referring to by Alexander Graf. And with that, I am moving on to the questions. I know that I spoke very quickly to fit all this into the talk. Do you have any questions about what I have said or any additions? Yeah. Do we have anyone that can provide a microphone to Andrew?
Over there. Huh? Yeah.
Is there anywhere on the wiki for sort of low-hanging fruit to get better enablement for some of these platforms where we know there are certain corner cases that need fixing on some of these platforms, but because of the vast number of platforms that you're trying to enable, you're just doing the basic enablement, if you will, and if somebody could help to tidy the mess up a little bit more, that would ensure that users can have a much smoother experience.
So I've moved on to the next slide, which actually has an address into the wiki. And from there on, or through the category ARM devices, you can find all ARM boards that have actually been documented in our wiki. I usually try to at least start a page with the technical data and the initial kernel status. But it's true that from time to time, we forget to update it with the latest information. So I think we do not have a particular list of like low-hanging fruits of, you know, like what change or package or something could be done by, say, a newbie to OpenSUSE. Me and a few others have been involved in working with the various upstream projects. For instance, I have done the initial upstream kernel enablement for the MLogic GXBB, that's the S905, and that was just, you know, very small changes to actually get that particular work done based on a vendor's Git tree. So obviously, if someone has a board and is motivated enough to do some work themselves, then obviously the old kernel code that most board vendors provide can be used as a base to get something working in mainline. Obviously there can be some help given in doing so, but it requires a bit of courage and motivation. I believe for ARM64, it's slightly easier than for 32-bit, in particular if there was like a related 32-bit platform already available with something like a serial driver that then only needs, you know, like a bit of kconfig changes or, you know, some special handling for, in my case, it was, you know, that some different clock frequency needed to be taken care of. It's definitely something that I always encourage people to help out with, yes. So on the one hand, it's a warning to people. This what I've shown earlier in this talk, that certain things will not yet work out of the box, even if they're, you know, available for sale and, you know, reasonably priced. But on the other hand, you could also see that as like a list of opportunities where you can actually actively contribute. Did that answer the question, or did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Was there some question in that area there?
Pardon my ignorance, talking about the Raspi, do we have,
do you hear me?
Yeah.
About talking about what?
The Raspberry.
Oh, yes.
Do we have all the userland packages like the Python libraries for the SenseHead, that's the one I'm playing with at the moment, somewhere in the OpenSUSE repos, or are they the parts where we would still have to do more work? So if, let's say, a student wants to go with our images instead of the Raspbian ones, they would still like need extra repos or getting things packaged up first?
That's a good question. So obviously there are certain base packages, like obviously the kernel and U-boot, that get taken care of first in order to get into a shell at all. And if we're lucky, also into, you know, network and USB and whatnot. But there was a post on the OpenSUSE-R mailing list, as seen here, about some Python GPIO library. On the one hand, missing, and when it was getting packaged, that it was not fully working. So that's actually a very good point. So in particular, when we are dealing with boards that did their own kernel, like the Raspberry Pi on, you know, some older fork, then there is some divergence in how the drivers actually look like when they get into mainline, and apparently that was the case for the GPIO driver. So apparently there is a different numbering, and also, you know, maybe locations and naming might differ between the two. So on the one hand, it would be about those people that need a particular library to just read up on the Python packaging guidelines if you need to, and just submit such packages to the build service. So there is like our rather small core OpenSUSE ARM team does not really go about and search the web for available software packages that might be useful to some user out there, in particular if we don't really know how to package them. So this is very much user-driven, both the hardware enablement for certain boards as well as the user space parts.
Very quickly, is that IRC channel on Freenode?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, thanks.
It should also be linked, or at least written in the on the wiki, yes. If there are no further questions, then I conclude this talk and invite Alex on for the next talk. Thank you very much. Okay.